I'm sure happy to be here. I feel a little bit out of place. I'm sitting or standing in a place that Ralph Langley and David Hull and Dennis Wiles and many others have preached, and I am definitely not up to their quality of preaching, but I hope that you'll enjoy hearing from one of your own today. I promise not to wake up the folks over here in the deaconate and bring up any chalkboards. So. My message to you is I'm leaving Huntsville tomorrow. I'm on an airplane at 6 o'clock headed to Washington, D.C. on September 11th, the fifth anniversary of the 9/11 tragedies. And some of my friends have questioned, you really want to fly on that day? Do you want to go to Washington? It might be in turmoil. There could be a small plane problem. You may risk some accident. They say, it's just so risky. Why would you go? So I ask you the question, would you go with me tomorrow, even if you knew it meant you might die? I want you to ponder that question today. Yesterday, many of us watched with joy as the shuttle Atlantis blasted off into orbit to help with the construction of the International Space Station. I was a pilot in the Navy with the commander of that mission, Brent Jett. What a great name to get selected for astronaut, Brent Jett. If you had a chance to go to space on the Atlantis yesterday with Brent, would you go? I ask you another question. Another fellow Navy pilot, a fellow flyer in P-3 aircraft, who I flew with at the Naval Air Test Center, is now the commander of Expedition 14 on the International Space Station. He'll be our next commander. His name is Mike Lopez Alegria. Would you join Mike in orbit and spend up to a year in space? Would you be willing to take that risk? My answer to all three questions, to go to D.C. tomorrow, fly with Brent, fly with Mike, is an unqualified yes. Why might you do that, Austin? Why would you risk going to Washington tomorrow, or why would you risk riding on a rocket? Do you really want to spend a year in orbit? It's an easy answer for me. The answer is that I feel called, as far as tomorrow is concerned, to do a good job, and my job takes me to Washington, so I want to do my job as unto the Lord. And since I was a small child, I felt a strong call to go to space. So for me, it's a matter of calling. It's literally a matter of faith. Faith in the face of risk. I'd like to share my personal testimony with you today to set the stage for this discussion of faith, risk, and hope. Perhaps if you understand me better, you'll be able to fathom why I'd gladly say yes to something that you might consider to be a risky activity. I'm going to tell my age here, but I was 12 years old in 1966, growing up in the shadow of the Johnson Space Center in a little town called Lamarck, Texas. I remember one day in my fifth grade year, I was 12 years old and outside feeding some pet rabbits. All of a sudden, everything around me seemed to get quiet, and I heard these words very distinctly in my spirit. And the words were, "You will make a difference." In that moment, a little bit frightened as a young boy, I felt an incredible pull, as though perhaps the flavor with those words was astronaut. You will make a difference, and astronaut were indelibly intertwined for me. Well, I didn't tell anybody, but I was determined that whatever it took, I would get to space. I didn't care what my parents said, what my friends said, I would ride rockets, and I would somehow make a difference. Flash forward a few years. I've been told that no one in the United States Navy has applied to NASA more times than I have. Now, I want to say just again, in deference to Billy's fine musical program, we did the Navy hymn today. That wasn't Eternal Father, that was the Navy hymn. But we have equal time for you Army guys coming up near the end of the service with Onward Christian Soldiers. I applied 8 times to NASA. Before I entered flight school, I tried it and they sent it to the trash can. I put some hours underneath my belt and I continued to try through 10 squadrons and 12 models of aircraft and 3,000 flight hours. And poor Cindy, who's down here in the front, she hasn't heard this yet. All that flying and all that stress nearly drove her to the brink. I drug her through 14 homes in 21 years. But every job that I had in the Navy, every action that I took, I weighed as to its impact on my astronaut selection. I prayed over every course of action that I could possibly take. I fasted. And again, with a great cook in the family, fasting creates a little bit of stress. So I fasted through some of the Lents that we went through, and I prayed and I searched the Bible in search of guidance. And I prayed for selection. I wanted God to bring His great promise to me to completion. I mentioned Mike Lopez Alegria and Brent Jett, who are currently taking the missions for Space Station and for Atlantis. They went to their magic interview in Houston for NASA program in 1992. And I got that close, but I was just a semi-finalist and I couldn't go. 2 years later, with the support of many astronaut friends, in 1994, I was brought to Houston for the interview. God had answered my prayers. I'll never forget that day standing outside NASA badging in, and then the week that we spent doing physicals and psychological profiles, and we spent doing physical exams, doing work on the treadmill, and then that fateful hour that I spent in front of the interview board with 10 of the astronaut corps. I stood in Houston at the threshold of my dreams, the culmination of a lifetime of work. And NASA said no. So I applied again in 1996 and made semifinalist. And I applied again in 1998 and again semifinalist. And through it all, Cindy would ask me, "Why, Austin? Why not just let it go? You made it once. Good job. Move on. Do something different." She also asked me the question that I asked you earlier. Would you go even if you knew it meant that you might die? How do you answer your wife when she asks you a question like that? Cindy knew what the risks were. I'd flown in 4 wartime actions. I'd seen, and she'd seen, aircraft accidents and fast cars that took the lives of our friends in the squadrons where we served. She'd suffered with me with the loss of Challenger and a friend who was the pilot, Mike Smith. And she questioned, why would I risk dying? Why would I risk being separated from my family? Why would I risk ridicule in my job? Why would I risk leaving this life to chase some lofty, unattainable goal? And how do you answer your wife when she puts you on the spot like that? Especially when you know that the truth, if you share it, might break her heart. I had to be honest. That calling that I'd felt since a little boy drove me with a ferocity that I could not completely describe. And I said yes, I would go. I had faith that no matter what God threw at me, He would get me through it, and my selection ultimately was in His capable hands. If you have some Bibles, open them up today to Hebrews chapter 11, which we call the roll call of faith. The people that are listed in the roll call of faith are those heroes that you and I can turn to when the world says, "You're nuts," or "You ought to give up," or "Just let it go." And you can turn to their stories for counsel and for comfort. I'm going to read to you today from the NIV version, Hebrews 11:1, which says this, "Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see." That's what I felt. I was certain of what I could not see. I told you that Cindy suffered through 14 moves in 21 years of Navy service, and many of those moves we did ourselves, which is why my back hurts right now. And while that astronaut goal energized me, even though I had that pain of rejection, it wasn't the same for my wife and for my family. In fact, the stress of all those moves and the constant stress of the annual selection letters and process and notification and all the applications we had to fill out was breaking Cindy down physically. She was a loyal Navy wife who absorbed all the pain to make my quest possible. Once we had 4 homes in 4 years, and we did all the moves ourselves. And through it all, Cindy just wanted a nest. She wanted a place that we could put down roots and call home. Well, by 1998, still no closer to NASA, I was offered a PhD candidacy at the Navy's Naval Postgraduate School and a professorship in spacecraft engineering. We were faced with yet another move across the country to the unaffordable but incredibly beautiful Monterey Peninsula. So I flew Cindy to California, even though she said, no, I don't want to go. I pushed my decision for the doctoral studies. I pushed my decision in the hunt for astronaut. And I proudly showed her an old home an hour north of Monterey that we could rent for $2,000 a month on Navy salary. Well, that assignment would have brought us to our knees financially, but it would keep me in my race for space. We're going to do it. On the way back to our room at the bachelor quarters, I saw a pain in Cindy's face that I'd never seen before, or maybe I'd seen, but I'd ignored for years. My challenge to get to space, as inspiring as it was for me, was killing my wife. She swallowed all the stress and all the anxiety, and it really ate her up on the inside. That became a life-defining moment in our relationship. Either I pursued astronaut selection and a doctorate in spacecraft robotics, or I cared for Cindy. I couldn't do both. And her sickness was a result of the stress that I'd put her through. A week later, we had our retirement papers in hand. It was time to leave. On the back of your soul seeds, I've given you two verses to memorize. Philippians 4, verses 6 through 7 is a verse that I've depended on for years. And from the NIV, it says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Jesus Christ." Paul gives us some more wisdom in 2 Corinthians, in the 5th chapter, verse 7, where he says, "For we walk by faith and not by sight." Walk by faith and not by sight. Those two verses were my rock in those early months after we left the Navy, and I abandoned any chance I had left to make it into space. Not until years later, here at First Baptist, under the mentorship of Jim Atherton and Joseph Hicks and some other men in our study group, did I fully understand the challenge process that Cindy and I had walked through. Jim encouraged me to take this class called Experiencing God, based on a book by Henry Blackaby and Claude King. In that study, I learned that faith is the confidence that what God has said or has promised will come to pass. We learned that sight is the opposite of faith. You know, if you can see clearly how something will be accomplished, then more likely than not, faith is not required. In that study, which I encourage all of you to pursue, there are seven fundamentals or seven realities of experiencing God. And the sixth reality is that you must make major adjustments in your life to join God in what He is doing. So leaving Monterey, leaving a professorship, leaving my doctoral work, leaving the Navy, these were all huge adjustments for me. And all along, though, God was pulling us toward Huntsville, but we just didn't realize it at the time. In the midst of that major adjustment, God was comforting me that He was still at work. He still had me in His hands, even as I watched my last chance at astronaut evaporate. I sought God's will earnestly in my first year in Huntsville. I was new to the civilian world. I was wearing a suit for the first time in forever. I was on a new path, which I as yet could discern no destination. I felt like I had to be going somewhere. So I sought God's will like Jim and Blackaby taught me. I sought God's will in the Bible. I sought God's will in prayer. I sought God's will through circumstances that I encountered, and I sought God's will through you, through the body of Christ, through the church. He confirmed in me that He still had me in His hands as I sought His will, and that He would accomplish this plan somehow to make a difference. Many of you participated in Rick Warren's study, a couple of years ago we did it, on the 40 Days of Purpose. Rick Warren has said recently that we are human beings, not human doings. I learned through Rick and through experiencing God and through my studies of the Scriptures that it wasn't what I could do, but what God could do through me as I struggled into making that major adjustment after the Navy. Blackaby says, "We forget that when God speaks, He always reveals what He's going to do, not what He wants us to do for Him. We don't have to be able to accomplish the task within our limited resources. We are human beings," said Rick Warren, "not human doings." And don't just take Blackaby's word for it. Mark chapter 10 Jesus' words are that with men it is impossible, but not with God, for with God all things are possible. So my big revelation coming to you here in First Baptist was that I was on a journey of faith. God had called me to a journey, not to a destination. You know, Scripture is replete with examples of people whose actions have demonstrated their faith. Men and women from all walks of life have risked their existence, risked their career, family, risked their reputation, stepping out in faith. And I wanted to do what Blackaby was talking about, to demonstrate my faith by my actions. One of my favorite characters in the Bible is Ernest Borgnine. You're still awake, you got that, all right. Ernest Borgnine, he's the centurion, if you remember the movie The Bible that would play every Easter, the centurion from Capernaum. He's a leader who marches into town, professes his faith in public for Jesus, and asks for the healing of his servant. It's in Matthew chapter 8, verses 5 through 13. And it says, when Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion, here's Ernest Borgnine, came to him and asked for help, said, Lord, my servant lies at home paralyzed and in terrible suffering. Jesus said to him, I will go and heal him. The centurion replied, no, Lord, I do not deserve to have you come under my roof, but just say the word and my servant will be healed. When Jesus heard this, he was astonished and said to those following, I tell you the truth, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. Later on in chapter 9, the blind men that Jesus healed, or the woman who sought to be healed from her constant bleeding, they all risked ridicule and rejection. The centurion risked his job. He was in public, in uniform, connecting his job with his faith, something that we don't many times today are not willing to do. You remember what I said from the Gospel of Mark? With men it is impossible, but not with God. With God all things are possible. These were people of the faith who risked it all. So I tell you that not only are we human beings and not human doings, you still have to remember that faith does require action. James 2:26 says, for as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead. Well, I have Austin Boyd's corollary to James, and that is that faith without risk is dead. And I'd like to tell you about another pilot, another astronaut, who understood that corollary very well. He was a man who flew in the face of risk in faith that God would always provide. I told you I was an astronaut finalist in 1994. I was an aging, fat Navy pilot thrown in with 119 intimidating super people. These were folks that had doctorates and had lithe bodies and had incredible intellect, and I was just a good application kind of guy. I'd applied more times than anyone else. Well, one of those pilots who came to Houston came a different week than I did, and he came from the Air Force, so equal time for Air Force folks. But our stories were identical. We each had a passionate desire to become an astronaut. We each had a passion for Jesus Christ. We were both supported by enduring, patient, and godly wives, and each of us had been rejected two or three times on the way there. But we were now at the magical interview in Houston. That other pilot was Rick Husband. He was a man of incredible faith who'd always trusted in God's provision. Rick would later be the commander of the Shuttle Columbia mission, the ill-fated mission. He was selected in 1994, and I was not. But I lived out Rick's story in tears as I read through his wife's poignant work, High Calling, as she talked about what they'd been through. And in High Calling, she talks about their last evening together, about how they put their faith in action. They're on the beach, just off Cocoa Beach, north of the Cape, and Rick says, Evie, isn't it nice to be inside the hedge of God's protection? They could both see God's hand at work in everything about them, even as they faced enormous risk and uncertainty in the day to come. They knew that God would provide in everything. Cindy asked me after Rick's accident, would I have traded seats with him that day? The answer, as hard as it was to express, was yes, I would go. I felt so strongly about that call from God to go to space that I would have joined Rick during my Navy days, as uncertain as his crew's future was the morning they launched. But you know, that uncertainty that Rick faced The uncertainty that Brent and his crew faced yesterday morning at 10:25 is not unlike the uncertainty that all of you faced when you got in a car and drove to First Baptist this morning. Someone could run a light on Governor's Drive and it would be over. Hudson Taylor, the famous missionary to inland China, once spoke of people like Rick Husband who feel called to mission, who are called to be vocal about their faith in a hostile environment. He said, unless there is an element of risk in our exploits for God, there is no need for faith. For without risk, we do not exercise our faith. Throughout the Bible, God rewards men and women like Evelyn and Rick Husband who live by their faith. Men and women who grab hold of God's promises even when they have to wait, and wait perhaps for a very long time. God commends the people who hang on forever until the end of their lives, and He commends those who hang on even if they never see the fulfillment of their dreams, see the fulfillment of the promise that God had promised them. You know, if you want to please God and you want to taste the fruits that He has in store for you, you must risk something, even when the odds are against you and even when you must wait a very long time. I told you that I felt called to make a difference. So once I'd left the Navy, I could no longer be an astronaut. I mean, you could try, but the chances were pretty small. So Cindy and I made the major adjustment. We came to Huntsville, seeking out the next phase of our lives together, joining you in 1998. But you know, that spirit, that desire, that burning passion for astronaut didn't die out just because I got my retirement papers and walked across the stage. And it's still burning, and I felt some passion. I've got to find a way to get this out, to conclude that goal that God gave me. So I decided to write about it, write about all the experiences that I'd had. I was convinced that my journey wasn't over. It is not over, and your journey's not over either. God had called me to space for a reason. I just simply hadn't seen it fulfilled yet. So I was going to keep plowing on. For 2 years, I'd been toying with the idea of writing a novel, and maybe some of you have dreamed of doing that as well. God seemed to be urging me, prodding me on, saying, Austin, you need to do this. And I certainly had a lot to write about. But talk about risk. You know, you can invest hundreds of hours writing a novel and do hundreds of thousands of words just to be ridiculed and rejected. I mean, the industry's set up that way. Maybe you get a slim shot at a contract, maybe a faint chance of a book. So I jumped in with both feet, craving to write about space and sensing some connection between that 12-year-old call to be an astronaut and my ability as a writer. So my first manuscript was 900 pages. I hired an editor to review it, and she lovingly told me, this will never sell. So I took another step. Without Cindy's permission, I borrowed $7,000 against our house and spent 3 more years and 3 more editors trying to bring it into shape and try to find someone to sell it to. 60 rejections later and $7,000 spent, I'd gone from tribulation to jubilation. I finally had publishers vying, competing for an opportunity to sell my books. Overnight, it seemed the world had gone from saying no to beating a path to my door. During Holy Week last spring, I sought the Lord in prayer. I said, Lord, why me? You know, why now? Why finally a book? I went to pray in a forest chapel outside Mount Hermon, California, and felt in that chapel these words. This is what I spent 40 years preparing you to do, Austin. This is the time. So when I began, I asked you, would you go tomorrow? Would you fly with me? Would you go even if you knew it meant you might die? Today we remember September 11th, 2001, when tens of thousands of us went to airports in New York and Washington, D.C., rode elevators to offices in the World Trade Center, or went up the escalator into the Pentagon. We weighed the risk of going to work, and whether in faith or just expecting to beat probability, we headed to our daily tasks. 5 years ago, just like today, I left on an early flight, or like tomorrow, I left on an early flight for Washington, D.C., heading up to Dulles Airport. On touchdown, our pilot informed the passengers that were continuing to New York that it would no longer proceed because of a terrorist attack in Manhattan. So as we got off, we were passing by a sports bar, and in the sports bar, a television showed images of a plane that had just impacted the Pentagon. I learned later that it was American Flight 77, and we were at the American 77 gate when I landed. Days later, marooned in Washington for lack of air travel, I learned that two of my friends had died in Flight 77, and another friend in an office that I used to work in the Pentagon. Two Navy officers, fellow aviators, and a fellow Navy civilian with whom I did many years of work had all perished. Each of them went to work expecting a day like any other, unaware of the uncertainty that faced them. Dr. Bill Caswell and retired Commander Chuck Droese were on 77 as they flew to California for one of our biweekly meetings in my classified unit. Retired Navy Captain Jack Punches was in the Navy Command Center when the aircraft hit. Tomorrow, September 11th, is uncertain. And uncertainty is part of all of our living inside of a time-space world. God's provision can sustain us through uncertainty, though, particularly where there is risk involved. Those of us who know Jesus Christ as our Creator, who trust Him as our Sustainer, can rest in assurance that He has us in His hands every second of every day, no matter what the risk is. We can live by faith that He has a plan for us, and we can trust that if His plan is interrupted by a terrorist or a disease or a speeding car, that we have completion and eternal life in Christ. Jesus will sustain us no matter what the sudden turn of events. But you know, God doesn't promise you or promise me a life without risk. Our faith is defined by risk. Remember that without peril, without the chance that we might fall, without distress or turmoil in our life, we'd have no need to trust in God's provision. Hebrews chapter 11, where I sent you earlier today, encourages us to forge on despite a potential for loss of life and to trust in God's provision. Look near the end of Hebrews 11, around chapter 11, verse 39. I'm going to read from the Message, which is a paraphrase. Not one of these people, even though their lives of faith were exemplary, got their hands on what was promised. God had a better plan for us, that their faith and our faith would come together and make one completed whole, that their lives of faith were not complete apart from ours. So He's telling us that we're all in this together, guys. Those that have passed and those that will come and those that are here today. We are all glued together by faith across the centuries as one. I might not ever gain the prize that I felt God was calling me toward to make a difference. I wasn't selected for astronaut, but I put 32 years into that effort. And I got this close. I gave up all that I had in order to get there. Yet it wasn't the attainment of the astronaut goal that matters. God called me to a journey. He called me to a journey of faith. A journey that took 40 years to prepare me to write a book. And perhaps now I can make a difference in the lives of those that read my work and realize the attainment of that dream that He set upon me as a 12-year-old. You and I could be like those people in Hebrews, though their lives were exemplary, never reached the ultimate prize toward which God led us. Remember those words out of Hebrews. God had a better plan for us, that their faith and our faith would come together to make one completed whole. Risk brings us to the foot of the cross every day. We're going to sing about the cross in just a minute. As we seek God's guidance, His ministering spirit, His forgiveness, and His strength, I encourage you, do not run away from risk. Put on the full armor of God like a good Christian soldier. Take up the shield of faith and wade into each day's battle smiling. Smiling with absolute confidence that God has you in His hand, with the cross of Jesus going on before. I'll close with the words of Paul, written to the church at Philippi, where he says, "Brothers, I do not consider myself to have taken hold of it yet. But one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining on toward what is ahead, I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus." May God bless you all. You've been an enormous help to Cindy and I in our journey that led us to this home. Thank you for making a difference in our lives.